Hey guys, how are you? I'm very delighted to have Greg Mannarino. Many of you in the comments have called and asked for Greg when I've lamented that there's almost a global mass psychosis of gaslighting. No one's talking about the debt situation and the great unraveling and what it actually means for us to go from a COVID low of about 0.3 on the 10-year to heading for 3%. There has been another voice out there that has actually been highlighting that, and we've got him on the show today. Greg Mannarino of TradersChoice.net, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here. I appreciate it.
No, me too. So Michael Burry was actually, I don't know, his Twitter account got kind of canceled a little bit, but he was around and about. Somehow he got a message out and he said something we've said, and I don't know if you concur and if you've got any comments on it. He's, of course, just for those watching, I'm sure you will know this, Greg, famous for The Big Short in the subprime period, the role played by Bale in the movie. He said there is no sincere, he said the equivalent, I'm paraphrasing, I don't have the exact quote, that the Fed is not fighting inflation. It can't, it's too far behind the curve. It is literally claiming some future cutting space for a future major deflationary shock-based event. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, all I see right now is a dollar that is cratering in absolute terms with regard to its value. I see central banks around the world pretty much following the same script. And I have no doubt at all in my mind that this is being done on purpose. And, you know, look, I think it's pretty evident what's going on right now, what they are attempting to do. That is to wipe out an entire class of people globally. I really feel like that. I've been explaining this for a very, very long time here. The middle class is under attack. I want the middle class people who have left out here to do something, take action, realize what's happening to them, how it's playing out here. The only thing I see deflating right now is again, the value of the dollar on a pretty substantial scale. I think it's going to get a lot worse despite the propaganda, the misinformation, the distractions and the deflections. And again, I really feel that none of this at all is by accident. There's no way a central bank can overshoot its inflation target of 2% by exponents and then claim, oh, we're sorry, this is just by freaking accident. You got to be kidding me. Anyone that's buying that is not in touch with reality.
And it's also not just the Fed, Greg. As I've repeated ad nauseum, the last time in the late 70s when Germany was at 7.8%, the governing interest rate was 11%. Today in Europe, it's zero.
So exactly. It's insane. I mean, this is the nonsense that they're pushing on people here. They're talking about the benchmark rate here being non-existent, and they're trying to explain to us, oh, we're going to fight inflation. It can't happen. It's a joke when you hear that. It drives me insane whenever I hear of a central bank, any one of them, saying, okay, we're really serious about fighting inflation. Meanwhile, they're keeping the benchmark rate at zero or 0.5%, and their claim of inflation is 8.5%. Don't work. It's a joke, and the joke is on us. It's so crazy what they're doing. I think people are buying it. There were just a few like you, me, and the people that follow your work and mine who understand the situation, but they really have created a world of zombified, frankly, imbeciles who are being led astray by design, and they're being crushed because they don't understand the situation.
And what the other half of the great impoverishment tax of a runaway inflation is that it's actually an enrichment for the billionaire class that has borrowed at 2% and 3% and bought assets with it. So I don't know if you comment also on that, but essentially the Gini curve being the distribution of wealth, what they're actually looking to do is flatten that right out so that they only have a handful of mega corp billionaires. And that in actual fact, those people have borrowed inordinate amounts, are seeing that debt devalued and are holding assets that are, even if they just hold against the true inflation, which shadow stats has about 16%. Basically, you've been lent money that's self-imploding and assets that are actually appreciating. What's your take on the enrichment element apart from the impoverishment element for the working poor and the middle classes?
Absolutely. I've been trying to tell people this exact same thing for years. You know, this is the biggest, most massive wealth transfer effect the world has ever seen. And it plays right into the elimination of entire class of people. Wealth always moves up, always, to the 1 and 2 percenters. You can hear politicians talk about this, that, and the other thing and how they're going to level the playing field. It's laughable. And whenever you hear someone saying that, you know, I don't know what they're trying to sell you, but it's just always going to be the same story because it's always been that way, unfortunately. And people, again, like they have no idea of what's happening to them. They walk around through time and space just, you know, not understanding what's going on. They're under attack. People are under attack right now, except for the 1 and 2 percenters who could not possibly be doing better today than they've ever done. And that will continue until, again, this whole thing resets to whatever it's going to reset to. And I think we're already in the middle of it here. This hyperinflationary event is going to get a lot worse, despite what we're hearing to the contrary. And it's going to change the entire financial landscape of the world. And we're going to have a new feudal system, period, the end. That's what I've been explaining for like almost 10 years.
Yeah, the technological oligarchical Bolshevik communism is what it feels like. How do we help? In my opinion, it's okay, we get the script. It's getting bad. How do we help those that are in the current position? And my solution, and I'd like you to comment on it and maybe contribute and share your own opinions, is we help people do their best to play this collapse where they, in a manner that they can further build wealth and then protect that wealth. I want to take you into the currencies because one of the interesting things is we know they're all going to be picked off. But at the moment, you have the Japanese yen that visually had 273% to GDP. It seems like those that are by far the most acknowledged indebted and at the same time don't have the blessing of being the world currency are going to be the first to fall. So I'm going to just show the chart because I know there's one thing we have in common is we both love to see the footprints in the sand. And that's
exactly.
God's handwriting on the wall. And this is our yen chart. So we had 6 macro FX trades for guys to trade. One of them was the USD ruble to a specified target that was already done. That was well pre-war. We did it in September. The other one was the USD JPY. So even taking on board your comments about the dollar, long run, you'll be right. There is a pecking order in terms of how the cards are falling. What's your take on what's going down in the yen? Because right now, that's probably the most topical FX currency move. I've got a bit of annotations on here. Let me know if that's too much going on and you need me to just clean it up for you. But this is the footprints here. Let me just take the eye off for a bit so you can get your bearings. That's a runaway melt up at the moment, Greg. What's your take? Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't think anyone should be surprised about what they're seeing with regard to all of the currencies relative to each other. I still believe this, and I've been saying for a long time that people should expect, let's say, just the relative strength of the dollar to remain high versus other currencies while its absolute value continues to dissolve. I don't see an end in sight here. I really don't. And I think that the current mechanisms that are in place across the spectrum of asset classes, including currencies right now, whatever we're seeing here is going to worsen moving forward here. And I mean, there are ways to fix this. I mean, you know, the most what I do in my blog with regard to my work is I try my hardest to keep it as simple and as straightforward as possible for people so they can understand what's happening to them. And that's the key, is raising awareness. Just understand what's happening. Because the vast majority of people have no clue at all what's going on, the current environment, what they can expect moving forward. And it seems like a lot of people are buying the dog shit from the propaganda ministry spreading their garbage here. So, you know, the greatest takeaway from all of this is to just be on the opposite side of this monumental event that we are leading up to here. And that is, in my view, like I've been saying since day one, a restructuring of the debt, a bursting of the debt bubble, which is being fostered by design here. Currencies themselves also being units of debt. We need to be outside their system. We can't keep participating in it. Okay. And at the same time, you know, we need to take advantage of it. Absolutely. But understanding what's happening just makes it easy for us to realize what we have to do, in my view. And I think if you follow my work, you know what that is. That is, you know, using the current system, weaponizing it against those that are trying to destroy us, because that's what they're trying to do. They are literally trying to destroy people at their most basic level, and again, at the same time, enriching the 1 and 2 percenters more so than we have ever seen before. This is a phenomenon, again, that is just getting worse every single day. And that's only because the 1 and 2 percenters understand the situation. They realize what's going on while everyone else is being kept in some kind of a distracted, zombified state. So that's my take on this. Yeah. You know, bet against the debt, become your own central bank, hold hard assets, try to sidestep the system they want us to be in, while at the same time weaponizing it. That's all I do. I get up every day and I say, okay, Greg, what do we need to do today to make sure that the system isn't destroying me personally or the people that follow my work? What is the most likely scenarios? How is this going to play out? And that's it. It's very simple, I think, to understand. Everything is cause and effect. Cause, effect, cause, effect. If you understand that, it makes it simple for us to know what we can do.
I've positioned a simple message that we give is you want to be short debt, and you can trade those shorts. For example, there's ETF on 20-year plus iShares. And you want to be long macro commodities, one of them being the
Sprott. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Trust. Big call.
So if you had a sort of a soundbite that's similar, or you want to comment on that one, what would yours be as a generalist advice? The guys get they're being attacked. They get they're under financial siege. They've heard from me and you with a multitude of messages on over countless years. What do they actually do to build wealth during this period? And if you've got any comments on protecting it as well, what would be your one-liner tag or comment on that, which I also just gave, short on debt trade and the long on macro commodities?
Sure. That's huge. I've been pushing that narrative for a while now, explaining to people. Well, look, I think I've been on that or that call for many years. I've explained to people that at one point we are going to see commodities skyrocket because, again, it's just so simple to understand. We know that the debt market itself is going to implode. It's going to do that, in my view, and I've been talking about this for over a decade. Okay, we get an implosion here in the debt market here, which is going to put an enormous pressure on global markets. And, you know, cash doesn't grow wings and fly off to money heaven. It just is going to move. It's going to move into commodities at one point. We're seeing a pretty big move right now. But this is nothing, in my view, compared to what's going to happen. I also believe that cryptocurrency is going to take off. The market cap of cryptos, in my view, is going to triple, you know, maybe go up even more than that when we get this massive, rapid movement of cash or this flow out of debt, out of equities, into real assets, into commodities here. You know, I've been a massive bull advocate to own physical gold, silver, platinum, palladium, silver, my all-time favorite forever, literally since day one. And cryptocurrencies too. I think they need to be in your portfolio. At the same time, we could take advantage of this market. The market right now is adjusting to a rising rate environment, and it's doing so, I believe, in a nice controlled fashion. Yes, the U.S. stock market is the S&P is like 7% off of a new record high. Okay, we're gonna get there. Again, I think we're gonna surpass that. Just keeping our eye on the 10-year yield, understanding that's the benchmark with regard to the yield curve, how to keep an eye on it, and looking at risk in the market. Risk is rising, no doubt about it, but it's a double-edged sword too. Rising risk is something I think that traders and investors want to embrace to a certain degree. So we want to take advantage of equities at the same time. I like to own large cap stocks that pay me to own. Companies will pay me to own their stock via the dividend, looking for undervalued aspects of the market. And it's just so easy, in my view, just to realize how it's flowing, where cash is going to most likely move. And the call to be long commodities is huge. Absolutely huge. Yes. People need exposure.
In the stock space, I would say I would bias more to the miners than general stocks, unless you get some real dividend hounds that are throwing off unbelievable earnings and dividends, cash driven. But the miners seem to be waking up finally. I've got the silver chart up here at the moment, and we started to see a little bit of a stirring in the likes of Wheaton, First Majestic, and a couple of others as well. Do you prefer the actual owning of the commodity or a mix of both, having the equity, for example, as well? So that's Wheaton Precious Metals.
I don't currently own any miners. I would consider a substantial portion of my portfolio already in hard assets. And I'm not saying I'm not going to buy more. I have not bought more in a while here, but I'm not saying I don't believe that these are good investments. I'm sure they are. I just don't own any at this particular time with regard to miners. I know a lot of people want to own these things. I see value here, but I just don't own any at this point. I like to own the hard asset. That's kind of how I feel with regard to attacking that part of the market. I would just rather own the asset itself and continue to add to positions, although I have not, like I said, bought any. And I haven't added to any of my metal positions in probably almost a year. But that doesn't mean I won't. I just feel like I have a substantial portion of my portfolio already in it. So I'm looking to allocate cash into other things as well. I like to be spread out. I don't like to be in any one thing. I know there's all these people that are all in on this and all in on that. You know, I just don't like that kind of exposure. I want to be out there into a bunch of different things.
There's a little bit too much fastest horse instead of stable of horses thinking. I've found that as well. I think many people thought for a long time that Bitcoin and crypto were going to be solely the only horse you needed. And I think this period has actually been a non-crypto period. It's been all about the FX for me. It's been all about the coming alive of the debt markets in terms of the yield. It's been all about the TRY failure, the ruble failure, which is now reversing into potentially being a quite a strong currency. And now we're watching the yen failure. It seems the macro has taken over as the dominator for me. Just as an interest, just on that that metals comment, I don't know if you like relative comparables, but I sometimes throw them out. I've got the XME, let me just try that one more time. That's the miners divided by the, let's get them in there, and divided by the SPY, which is the general top 500 equities. Let's just see that chart again. I think I've got him somewhere. There we go. This is a relative, I'm going to give you macro because I love looking at the long-term charts because that shows you kind of, in essence, how it's gone. And it's been a tale of woe, broadly. That's log scale. I'll just go back to regular for a bit. We talk about falling wedges of a great scale. Whoops, that's a bit too fat a line. Let's try remove that. But this is essentially the role or the percentage domination of miners in the SP 500 over the long period. And you can see, apart from 2009, when you had a bit of a spike with the collapse in equities and a little bit of a beginning of a run for gold, that was the last known high. If we went back to 1981, this would be even higher. Going left, it would be up and to the left, it would be even higher. And it seems like it seems like a bottoming that has taken place for me in the beginning of some move. And when you talk about commodities only really just getting onto their horse, this chart seems to validate that statement rather well for me.
I like that chart. I mean, what do you got? You got a nice falling wedge. And you have a breakout, so it looks pretty strong. I like it. I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Any other major areas or that you would see? I mean, let's talk about crypto. I'm with you on the macro bull scenario. I think in terms of, you know, Raoul of Real Vision and his exponential everything, that is going to come. But what about this way that they can take some of the heat out of inflation with a major demand killing event? Such as, for example, just thinking off the top of my head, a bank hack and everybody losing their money in their bank accounts. That's one of the only ways I could see inflation at current levels having some material pullback of great note that could potentially bring containment for a short period until the usual solution of run the printers comes back into play. Where do you stand on a macro demand killing event that could make the central banks look a little less behind the curve than they truly are?
A macro demand killing event. Well, look, I think this is what I've been saying for a very long time. You know, people look at demographics and they think it's static. It is not static. Demographics are changing, and they're changing rapidly, as we spoke about at the beginning of this video here. Although we have an entire class of people that seem to be going extinct, we do have wealth being reconcentrated up into those 1 and 2 percenters who happen to spend a lot of money. So I really feel that the big thing that a lot of macro people, I'm a macro guy too. I love the macro pictures. I mostly am a macro guy. So that's why for me, I'm looking at the current situation. I say, okay, well, the demographics are changing and they're changing very fast. How does that affect demand? I think demand may actually increase, being that we're seeing this, again, massive epic, you know, movement of cash up the food chain. So, and then we have the people that are being pushed down to the lower rung who are being, you know, dependent on government handouts just to survive. So the demographic is what we really need to look at when we're talking about demand. And I don't think there's many people talking about this. I've been addressing it for a very, very long time. I just see a complete demographic shift occurring. It's happening very rapidly. I think it's going to get a lot more dramatic moving forward. So I know a lot of people talk about, you know, falling demand and deflation. I don't see it. I think people, I think demand probably is going to increase as wealth in certain, in probably most of the market as the demographic changes. And it's changing right before our freaking eyes.
And some of the best demographics are in countries like Indonesia, which have a very young population and grow, while some of the most aging demographics are Western, Europe, particularly Germany, Sweden, and also the United States, not too far behind them. So are you by definition predicting a demand contraction in those areas and increase, for example, in the Southeast Asian, where you have a much younger population? I mean, is the new
a wealth demographic. It's, you know, it's not so much age. It's, you know, it's just a phenomenon that we've been seeing here for a while, and I've been keeping my eyes on this here, just how the wealth is moving, and it's been doing this for a very, very long time. But wealth is being concentrated in fewer and fewer people, as we said in the beginning of this video, and there's no doubt about it. And you know, these people are acquiring more and more wealth in this current, well, it's been going on for a while, but I think it's accelerating here. They're going to keep on spending. They're going to keep buying and big ticket items, houses, cars, you know, boats, all that kind of stuff. So that's coming down to the demand side of it. I think demand is going to continue to be strong. And that is wealth.
But what you're talking about there is a secular mega wealth purchasing assets. So that's kind of Bill Gates buying the farmland. It's BlackRock, Blackstone buying properties and turning everyone into tenants into their own property. That is more changing the name on the clipboard of who owns the assets, and part of that Gini curve, the assets being pushed to, you know, the orchestrators of the pump and dump scheme. What about the consumer demand, the more consumer demand? Where do you stand on that? Do you still see?
Like, I think people continue to borrow here, at least here in the United States, and they continue to bury themselves in debt with no end in sight. And they I don't know what these people are doing. I said this would likely happen in a video of mine a while back. I said, watch what's going to happen. You're going to see former members of the middle class who are going to continue to borrow to maintain the illusion of that. And that's exactly what is going on here. Consumer demand in certain parts of the wealth demographic, of course, are going to fall. And of course, in certain other parts, they're going to gain. So how that plays out, still, I don't see a major fall in overall. Maybe, you know, in crude oil at one point here, but that's not going to affect the price of it, at least in the shorter run. I think, you know, assets like crude are going much, much higher here in this environment of crisis to crisis economics, what we have here. And, you know, they're going to blame supply chain disruptions and everything else on this here. But I don't see really, because of the wealth demographic shift, however you want to put it, I don't see demand falling all that much. And I think, honestly, we're going to see this market continue to go higher until we get a meltdown in the debt market. That's the pivot. That's the key. Everything else is just, you know, whatever it might be, theater to me, understanding how everything, assets in general, derive value from what's happening in the debt market. So understanding that perspective makes it pretty easy, I think, to stay ahead of the curve. And I have to say that I've kept the people who follow my work on the right side, understanding that dynamic for a very, very long time. And I think it's going to continue to play out that way until we get the what the ECB is calling a blowout in bond yields, or I call it an implosion in the debt market. So, you know, continue to do, people that understand and follow my work, realize the spots that I'm in, because I'm an open book. I tell everybody what I'm doing when I'm doing it. For example, this morning, I told people I was buying another company. I just put it all out in my newsletter. I want everyone to know what I'm doing, and they can decide if it's good for them.
This mortgage rate is 5%. This is the 30-year fixed rate. This was the chart I was actually looking at. This is going to point to property becoming a lot more expensive to purchase, and that might just take some of the fizz out of the U.S. property boom. I think you're at not much more than 2.6 not very long ago, back end of 2021, and we're now at 5. So that's almost an effective doubling, and the rate at which this has ascended is looking, as a result of the debt markets movement, to be a very clear bottom after a series of downside continuation patterns. Isn't that going to take some of the wealth effect out of the property market for Americans?
I wouldn't doubt it. I think that this, I mean, look, no asset is going to go straight up without some kind of either pullback or a consolidation period, but that necessarily doesn't mean it's bearish in the longer run. You know, when any, you know, assets, as you well know, you know, you go up, you pull back, you establish a new floor, you go higher. We'll see how this plays out. I think it's all, everything's going to change. Everything is going to change once the debt market, you know, becomes very real to people. So for now, I don't see anything changing too dramatically. I still believe we're going to see, the price of everything continue to rise. The cost of labor continue to rise based on the fact that we're going to continue to see currencies lose purchasing power around the world. And people get squeezed. That's what they're doing. They're being squeezed, and they're being squeezed deliberately. And it's not going to stop until they're done. They, being central banks, finish what they started over 100 years ago. To become
multi-generational plan. We're looking at a yield curve inversion, and this is one that didn't invert for the medical events of March 2020 that may not be mentioned. But it did. The last time it inverted was the great financial crisis, roughly at this cross that I'm drawing, and the previous one, the dot-com boom. This is a 30-year minus the 2-year. So the tens and twos have inverted and did invert also for CV19. But this is the first inversion on yield that was a real plummet. So this was disorderly descent. You know how the Fed doesn't like it. The last time we were that disorderly was 2005 into 2007-8. What's your take on yield curve inversion? And how long, I suppose more specifically, because everybody goes, yeah, it's a good indicator, but, and it seems a lot of people are making excuses like nothing too serious will happen. It's different this time, I'm hearing, and I don't buy any of that. And the rate at which it happens. And I also think the lightning will strike sooner than normal. Everyone says, well, you've got 17 months, you've got 33 months, there's still time. And I have a feeling that people's fingers are going to get slammed in the piano. What's your take? How long till the bite? Is something going to bite at all?
If we're talking about, you mean you're talking about the equities responding to a yield curve inversion?
Equities, I mean, you know, the general demand, economical.
Who knows? I think we're in. I don't think this time is any different. But at the same time, you know, I don't sit and dwell too much on when something's going to happen. What I do is I just look for clues, and I look for it just in one thing for the most part, and that is following that 10-year yield. Looking at the macro picture, what are central banks doing? What kind of crisis do they have? Are they going to throw at us next year? Look, there's no doubt in my mind whatsoever that all this is going to get very real at one point. And I used to put a lot of thought into when. And I learned that it's very difficult to do that. So what I try to do is just look at the current environment and see what's going on pretty much in the moment, realizing what's coming down the pike and putting ourselves in the right spot for the moment when this whole thing gets very real. And it really isn't hard to understand that it is going to happen. It's just a matter of when. And I think the when can become very paralyzing to people, that because they say, okay, we know this is going to happen, so I can't put money to work here. I won't put money to work here because I realize it's going to happen. But it could be tomorrow. It could be next week. It could be 2 years. No one knows. So I really don't even think about it. Anyway, with regard to yield curve inversion and these things that we've been seeing lately, I don't give it too much thought right now, understanding that the bigger picture is what it is. Things are going to happen when they are. And, you know, there's going to be a run for the door, no doubt about it, when this does occur. But just looking at things like market risk, I have a market risk indicator, which I created, called the MMRI. It's on my website, traderschoice.net. Risk is rising in this market, no doubt about it. But that doesn't mean that people should be frightened of it. People should look at it and think of what it means for them, their exposure to things. I believe if you have your portfolio balanced in the right way, meaning exposure to commodities, for example, have some cryptocurrencies in your portfolio here, being long the market until you can't be long anymore. I mean, how many times have we heard from these so-called market predictors, oh, it's going to crash tomorrow, next week, next month, and they've been wrong 100% of the time. And I've been telling people to stay long this market for a long, long time. And it's been the right move. I don't see any red flags as of yet. I don't see one. I see maybe a couple of yellow ones. I don't see anything red. So at that moment, that's when I'll worry about it. So for now, I don't think too much about when it may occur or how long, because, you know, none of us would have expected this whole thing to go on, I think, as far as it has. But yeah, they've managed to
go further too. We characterize these markets as the big long. And you have the movie The Big Short, that was the GFC. And since then, we've said this is the era of the big long, which is mainly risk assets. I've pulled up BTC here, Greg. You might not perfectly recognize it because I've divided it by the NASDAQ composite, the IXIC. So a relative valuation. We love doing this in our trading environment.
This is nice.
Yeah, and it kind of gave us, we were very aggressively long on the breakouts of September 20 here, and said you could even use leverage, which is something we don't normally encourage with most traders. It's a killer during that period. And this was essentially a 2.5 year, because that was the 2017 high, the end of 2017, all the way to well into going September, October, when you properly got onto your horse for Bitcoin. So that's a better part of 2.6, 2.7 years in setup. And we said you're going to get an abnormal run because of scale size in that. And since then, we've been in a very similar type setup. And this is why we're a bit of a macro bull still on crypto on the macro side, although we've been unengaged at a trading level. Some people are holding what I call blue pot, sort of just investment level. For what's coming here. Does crypto, in your view, then take another overperformance run to the upside on balance of probabilities in your crystal ball relative to tech stocks?
I love that. I think, look at that chart. It's almost like a flag or a pennant, or it's perfect. It's a nice setup here, what we're seeing.
Yeah.
It's very nice. Yes. I've been telling people for a very long time that's the way it's going to happen. We've seen this consolidation period for quite a while. And I haven't seen this. And this is exciting for me to see because it kind of validates what I've been explaining. I really do think it's going to play out just like that.
Yeah, I do too.
I'd be surprised if it doesn't. Something dramatic would have to occur for that not to play out the way I think you've outlined it here. I think that's very, very interesting.
Yeah, for me, it's very much a mini me of the 2.5 year event. And that's typically how markets go up. You know, they go up, they rest and have continuation periods, and then they go again. So you generally go with the trend. I mean, at every technical level, that looks right to me. But at the same time, short term, I've been kind of cautious. Bitcoin, I think I've said, you know, sit tight. Don't do anything leveraged just yet. You're going to get thrashed around while this market is digesting these rate increases. I mean, there are a lot of articles that have been thrown out how Bitcoin has been stumped because it doesn't pay a yield, and now yield has become the key thing. And I think you need to let this FUD bounce around the walls a little bit, but in time, we're going to move higher here. So macro, definitely a bull on the crypto side versus tech. What other asset classes? I mean, clearly gold and silver, Greg, you're a fan. The macro commodities, do you have a commodity that you like? I mean, energies have obviously been rippers. You mentioned oil. I'm going to bring up oil. If you were getting a commodity fund, would you get an energy heavy one, or would you go in agries or metals? Where are you leaning on all of that?
I own several oil and gas producers right now. I also own PDBC, which is a commodities ETF. There's other ways to attack this. Absolutely. You know, to me, the easiest thing to do is a straight line between two points. I'm kind of I keep it simple for people and myself. I don't do anything too complicated, too crazy here. I mean, people should definitely look into, you know, there's many exchange traded funds that will give them exposure to whatever commodity they feel is the one that they should be holding. But I think all of them are looking good right now, and they're all going to benefit at one particular time. Crude oil, I think, is going to surge higher. Gold, silver, obviously, platinum, palladium, and two, wheat, all these things.
Natural gas, by the way, which has become such a political.
Natural gas is another one for you. You know, that's what I've been telling people for a while now, to get exposure to oil and gas companies, the big ones. If they go to my website, traderschoice.net, I have it all listed there. Specific ticker symbols, the stuff that I'm involved in. Everything that I am doing is available for anyone to see for free right on my website, traderschoice.net. So I hope people take advantage of that resource. I have a chat room there too. I want people to take advantage. It's free. It's all free too. Utilize these things. Get together with like-minded people. Understand what they're doing. And gain a perspective. Look at this. This is another beautiful beautiful setup.
Sure. Yeah. Agris and lumber and things like that are not specifically energy. We've seen them also growing. I also talk from a couple of strategic guys. That there's going to be food shortages at the back end of this year. We de-globalizing. So we're going to get an anti-Greenspan Goldilocks. We're going to get what I refer to as the inverse Goldilocks, where you lose the economies of scale. You lose a lot of things. Fink has said, or BlackRock, that there's de-globalizing this Russia-Ukraine narrative that they've created. And as a result, things are going to get stubbornly more expensive. It's going to be a great time for black markets, for commodities, and undersupply. Are we going to do the whole communist thing and do price controls for food and then undersupply, and then people have to buy black markets because government wants to get engaged to help and all of this? Are we going to have to live that Bolshevik communist type narrative? Is it going to come for us, Greg? What does your crystal ball show for us there?
Unfortunately, I believe you're right. I think we are going to may end up going that way. I hate to say it, but I do think that something along those lines is probably in play, probably is already. They are trying desperately to bring in a new system, and nothing would surprise me anymore. Nothing surprises me anymore. But understanding the current situation, where things are going, absolutely, it does look like that. For sure.
Are you doing anything prep-wise for the more basic needs, the what I would call the full-on, you know, reset prepper guide in terms of self-reliance, food supply, and anything like that that you would share with our other viewers?
I think people need to be ready for anything. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with being prepared for a worst case scenario. In fact, I always prepare myself for a worst case scenario. And I'm not just talking about the markets. You know, look, I always talk about how people should take advantage of the market, and that's all well and good. But there's other things too, of course. You know, you got to, I tell people, you know, love each other, care about each other, be charitable, get together with like-minded people, you know, people that you can rely on in a worst case scenario. Which does look like we're going to get there. I think they're determined to expand the current war, create new wars. A series of more crises are coming our way. There's no doubt about it. So just be aware of these things. And understanding all that, it should make it simple for people. And then, of course, then we're going to get the grand finale. The grand finale of all this is just going to be the correction to fair value, I guess. Of, and no one is even knows what that is, what that actually would be with regard to asset prices. It's all I can say is it's going to be a moment that people are going to talk about for a very, very long time.
As a final parting shot, Greg, thank you, first of all, for your time. The medical event that led to the pandemic of March 2020, I'm saying that ain't over. It's going to reemerge. It gives too much power and too much control. They're going to tell you they're better, smarter, less side effects. It's time everybody got it. Da 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 da. New kind of false flaggy bird variety, pig variety, bat variety, pangolin variety.
Exactly.
Who knows? Are we going to see that? I've given you where I'm leaning, but you're quite happy to hear you say otherwise.
I think we're on the same page. I can say and tell you that right now without getting too into it, because you know what they're going to do. They'll deplatform us. Absolutely, 100%. I think they're going to do things to us that people can't even believe. I've been telling people that for the longest time, way before that disease process came out. I said, just be ready, because they're going to do things that you're not even going to believe moving forward, things you can't even dream about. And I think that is, again, something else that's in the cards, something a lot worse, something more grotesque, something with more outward symptoms, who knows what, you know, boils or scabs or something that, you know, something that's really going to rock people and frighten them to the core of their being. They'll do whatever they got to do to push their agenda forward, period, the end.
So the takeout from that, rather than just being doom mongers or porn purveyors of fear, is people should seize this relative lull where there's this distracting narrative, assuming the bulk of our audience is probably not in Ukraine or Russia. They should seize this relative lull in the summer period to make some real determined, self-reliant, de-urbanizing planning to secure themselves a better, safer place with more time and conglomerate with like-minded community building, such as my community, which is focused on that, and your community that is probably quite heavily focused on that. They should start getting to that touch with people locally. They should find their way to the soil. Is that the right assumption? Is there anything else you would add to that?
I would have to say you hit the nail squarely on the head, because this is the kind of message I've been pushing to people for a very, very long time. They got it. We got to embrace these things. Have to. And we have to be ready for whatever they're going to throw at us. Just raise your awareness. Realize what's going on. Once you realize what's going on, everything just seems to just fall into place. The whole thing.
For our crypto friends, I'll stop sharing the chart. It might just be sucking a bit of bandwidth. I was concerned about our bandwidth today. For our crypto friends, my take is that this is a big leg up for the surveillance finance game. That does it probably end up with a chip under the skin. That means subdermal surveillance beyond just surveillance externally. But there are many that still believe crypto is their liberty. Bitcoin fixes this, gives them their freedom. Where do you stand on the level of liberty of crypto? Should we be pragmatic and non-idealistic and invest in it for the wealth it might create us? And not a believer, or should we be full on libertarian? Bitcoin fixes this.
Well, I'll tell you, I wish sincerely that more people would have. Very few people that I personally know hold any cryptocurrency. It's very sad in my view. I wish this would have been adopted more widely. Why do I hold this stuff? I own about 7 different cryptos at this point. Bitcoin is my largest holding. I've been buying that for the longest time. I think for me, it comes down to, understanding where cash is going to move when the debt market implodes. And I sincerely believe the market cap of cryptos is going to skyrocket when this happens. It's going to be very, very rapid. That's the reason why I hold it. Do I wish that people would adopt these things sure. I own real estate, houses, artwork, whatever. I would sell these things if someone wants to pay me in Bitcoin or anything else. I wish people would do it. I wish people would start adopting another system other than the one that they're being forced into. But they're so indoctrinated that they just don't want to. I get people are always arguing, crypto is not real. Oh, but the dollar is real? Really? How does that work? Explain. You don't even own these things. The dollar is a unit of debt being issued by a central bank that you don't even own. You owe it back to the central bank plus interest they create out of thin air. If you're holding a cryptocurrency, you own it. It's yours. Anyway, that's my take on it.
But is the crypto your real freedom, or is it just a Trojan horse that takes us deeper into digital money and complete surveillance? I suppose that is the question.
I think the move for governments is they're going to go to a digital money. And unfortunately, it's $3 trillion in actual cash that exists on Earth with regard to the U.S. dollar. The rest of it is just all digital. It's not on the elemental chart. I think that is the way we're going here, to a completely cashless society. I think that's been in the works for a very, very long time. And it's all about control. It's all about more control, more surveillance. They want to see everything you're doing. Can you lend me $5 for gas or $10 or $15, $20? Can't do it anymore, because they're going to want to know every single transaction that takes place. And it's not going to be able to be hidden. And it's about more control, more taking away of our liberties and freedoms. And it's, again, we're definitely going into some kind of dystopian control, absolutely surveilled society. We're already there now, but I think it's going to get a lot worse.
Yeah. Greg Marinino, we took more than the time we had. Been great. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. People can engage with you at traderschoice.net, your website, where you have actually been highlighting the great failing of debt and what it truly means. You are, by the sounds of it, encouraging pragmatic investment in crypto rather than idealistic investment. Thanks so much for coming on to our show. Really enjoyed this. And maybe we can look at doing this again. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll tag you in the excerpt when it comes out on our channel.
Absolutely. Thank you, Greg. Thank you. And thanks for having me. I appreciate it.